You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Lead a fan podcast with Dan and Scott. Hottest golf podcast, whether you like it or not. Fresh from back in the day when Lester played at the park. 7 p.m. special where they played after dark. From the birdies to the focus to the losses and the win. Welcome podcast, patron to the show. Lead a pen, get busy golfing or get busy dying. Hottest golf podcast and I swear I ain't lying. Yeah. Leave the pen.
Welcome back, podcast patrons, to episode 209 of Leave the Pen podcast. Absolutely insane to say that number. I'm joined by my good friend, Patrick. You might know him from the Goat Farm. You might know him from Par None podcast. You're going to see him kind of everywhere in the upcoming months and into the new year on Instagram, social media, everywhere. Big metalhead, big golf junkie, just like myself. So this is going to kind of be just a back and forth episode, a little bit of a riff session. Pat, what is going on, my man?
Not a whole lot. I'm stoked to be on the podcast. I'm 100%. I love that this is kind of a metal golf thing. I'm not going to lie. Like, I've been wanting to do something like this for a while, but it's just kind of hard to find in the golf community people that you can do metal and golf with. So, I'm lit up. Like, you can see the story that I posted. Like, I was just glowing. Like, I'm so ready to do this, man.
Yeah, it's crazy because the longer I get into the podcast world, I guess the more I've been into the music world, which has been forever. It's been much longer than golf, you know, obviously, which I'm sure, you know, same for you. It blows my mind how many people into kind of the music that were into punk, hardcore, heavy metal music also play golf. And it's funny because the episode right before this, Tony from Dragged Under, I just had him on and I mentioned to him about that. And he said, man, it all started with Alice Cooper. And mm-hmm. I thought, wow, I completely forgot about that, you know?
Yeah, he was like the number one amateur in the country or in the United States for a few years or something like that, or like a year or two. He's a phenomenal.
Yeah, in his
golfer.
Age group, yep.
Yeah, and actually, I think the reason why he didn't pursue golf is because he went after music instead. He could have gone, a lot of people said he could have gone pro, and he just chose not to, which blows my mind, because if I don't know, I always kind of joke around, if I could give up all my golf talent for musical talent, I would do it. Because I would love to be a rock star, but I think it's probably like the grass is greener on the other side kind of situation. If I was a rock star, I'd probably say, oh, I'd want to be a pro golfer. So
yeah, well, you know, that's like the old adage, like all rappers want to be basketball players, all basketball players want to be rappers, right? Yeah. Like maybe that in our genre of music, maybe that's it. Like maybe all metal heads want to be golfers and all golfers want to be like, you know, front men of hard rock bands.
Which is hysterical because you would just usually think they're so polar opposite. Like they don't go together at all. But yeah, no, I've met a lot of metalhead golfers, but they don't like advertise. It's almost like they don't want to tell people they listen to heavy metal music while they're on the golf course.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is that we do a segment on our weekly called like, Who the Hell Is That? Right. Because all golfers, like pro golfers, like vanilla is all hell. Right. I mean, you can line them all up, take their hats off and you have no idea who they are, but there's so many people in music that want to be golfers. I've yet to find, except, and I'll tell you this story real quick, except for Brennan Steele, who I had on the pod, who was best friends with the guitarist of Linkin Park. They actually had a podcast together for a little bit. He's like a big metalhead. He's played golf with M Shadows from Avenged Sevenfold and Sinister, their guitarist. Like, just crazy. But aside from him, like, I can't think of any golfer that would front, you know, a metal band.
Victor Hovland's a huge metalhead, but I couldn't see him fronting a metal band. He just looks too nice. But then again, maybe there's a lot of metal. Like I've met the lead singer of Polaris. I've met Jamie, lead singer of Alpha Wolf. they're like the sweetest guys on the planet. I got to hang out with Fit for a King. Ryan Kirby is the sweetest guy on the planet. But like, I don't know if I can see Victor Hovland on stage just going balls to the wall doing the metal thing.
Yeah, you know what's crazy? Like, he's into like that Norwegian black metal, which I mean, like, you could say hard rock and metal is a niche, you know, corner of the musical world, but like that is like that is so specific, it's insane.
Yeah, it's very much a subgenre of a genre kind of thing. And there's like only a handful of bands that you could really name that are that have broken through to like the metal scene that everyone listens to for the black metal scene and everything like that, like Cradle of Filth kind of thing.
Right.
Everyone knows Cradle of Filth, but there's a laundry list of Norwegian death metal bands that no one's ever heard of.
Yeah, well, it's funny because people that listen to this podcast are going to be like, wait, what the hell is he talking about? I've never heard of Cradle of Filth. But yes, you and I, like, that's a band that is semi-mainstream popular in that genre. But yeah, it's nuts because it's two completely different worlds, you know? Like, they shouldn't mesh whatsoever. But I think going back to what you said, like, a lot of those lead singers being some of the nicest guys in the world, like, it's a stage persona. And need a way to, you know, kind of decompress and come off that high of being on stage. And I think golf gives them that.
Yeah. There's nothing better than going to like a metal show and you're all decked out in your torn jeans and your band tee and all that stuff than waking up to like a 6 o'clock tea time and putting on your golf clothes and going golfing.
Yeah, there's I mean, I've got so many hobbies and stuff, obviously music and golf being the two biggest ones. But I always tell people, like, there's no way you could put me in a box, you know, and like with neat corners, because I would just like pop out everywhere of that box.
Yeah, no, I'm the exact same way. And I've struggled with it as a golfer a little bit. I don't know if you've had this problem, but like you said, a lot of golfers are very vanilla, very middle of the road. Like, you take off their hats, they all look the same kind of thing. Being somebody that has so many different interests that kind of bounce all over the place, it's kind of hard to go like, oh, I'm going to go hang out with a bunch of golfers because like, I like golfing with them, but we don't have necessarily other things in common. You know what I mean? So it's like, oh, I go hang out at a metal show, but other than the metal music, I really don't maybe have a whole lot of things in common with them. You know what I mean? So it's kind of cool not being in a box, but it like makes doing something like this pod, doing podcasts difficult. Cause like, I want to do the golf thing, but I would love to start a music channel as well. Like, I've always wanted to do like the reaction videos and stuff like that. But it's like, how do you do all of your, I also want to start like a fitness page and nutrition page at the exact same time, but you got to have to like pick which one you want to ride for the time being, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Which one is going to take up the majority of your time. It's funny. Someone I worked with said to me once, we were playing like, would you rather, and they said, would you rather never work out again or never play golf again? And everyone else was able to give their answers. I mean, just instantaneously, you know, like, would you rather have this or that? They'd be like, oh, this 100%. And like, I'm sitting there and they're going, okay, like, it's not that deep, dude. Like, I'm just asking you a question off the top of my head. I'm like, no, like, I'm not sure, like, gun to my head, if I could make that decision, because half of me was like, no, there's no way I could just play golf and like, and not be fit, not be in shape. But then the other half of me is like, there's no way I could just live and like never play golf. So I still don't have an answer to that question.
I don't either. I was thinking about it while you were giving your answer. I know, because they both do so much for your mental health too.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine giving up one. I couldn't. Those are the two things I plan on doing to the day that I die. I want to be able to lift weights and play golf. And you get strong to play golf because it's off season for me right now. So I'm putting on weight. I'm trying to get faster and stronger, but I couldn't imagine not working out and playing golf, like taking the John Daly approach to it. Like, I don't think I could possibly do that.
Yeah, I like that. Good for the mental health. Although a lot of times golf, it, you know, is not positively affecting my mental health.
No, you're absolutely right there. No, it can. There's months where it gets really, really dark. But same could be with fitness. I don't know if like for me, it's like I have goals. I'm trying to hit new PRs, and you're not getting there. Maybe your body's not responding. You start getting frustrated in the gym. You start getting a little. You start to, you know, negative self talk starts to come in at the gym.
You hit that glass ceiling almost, and then you just can't break past it at times.
Yeah. So I think they're parallel. I think golf and fitness just go hand in hand. You shouldn't have to choose between the two.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was a poor question. So if she's listening to that, it's a poor question. Yeah. Unfair question that you asked me there. circle back to the music for me, because, you know, honestly, aside from people that have been in bands and stuff, I don't really get to talk music much on this podcast. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten some really good reactions from people that have listened to it, like, hey, man, I really like the direction that conversation went. I never knew this, that, you know, or the other. So let's talk about you real quick, kind of how you got into golf and what was your kind of first foray into music? Like, can you remember the first album or the first CD that you ever bought or that you ever received as a gift?
So golf I've been doing my whole life. I had a golf club in my hand before I even had memories. There's old, my grandma has VHS tapes of me swinging plastic clubs when I could barely walk, kind of thing. I've always had a golf club in my hand. My grandpa taught me how to play golf. My first word, my first sentence was actually back and through. I swear to God. My first sentence was back and through. So I'm a born and bred golfer. And I've been doing it my whole life, played high school golf, a little bit in college. I just made bad choices in college and it just never panned out the way that it probably should have. I just wasn't mature enough at the time, much more mature now with my golf game and how I approach that. Music, this is almost embarrassing, but so I kind of, my music was regulated when I was a kid. So I couldn't listen to a lot of things I want to listen to. I actually grew up on like R&B and like boy bands. It was like the only thing I could really listen to as a little kid. But I would always get in the truck with my dad, and there's a radio station here. You've probably heard it. It's called KC95. It was a classic rock station. And I'd get in the truck with my dad. And he would always ask me, like, so who sings this? So he was old school rock band. So I grew up on like more hair metal stuff, like Motley Crue, Guns N' Roses, Dokken. Okay. Even stuff like Who and Iron Maiden, like Rolling Stones was huge in my house. Sting, U2. So I got into rock because of my dad. And then I just kept getting more aggressive with the rock music. So actually the first album I think I ever got that was a rock album to myself was Drowning Pool Sinner.
Okay.
First one I ever got. And then after that, it was Linkin Park's Hybrid Theory. Those are my two first rock albums. So I remember going to Walmart and I couldn't believe my mom let me buy it because the album art has this guy's fist and has the word sinner like carved into his hand. I'm like, I couldn't. I went after that album too because I thought there was no way I could get it. She's like, "Hero, you can have it." I was like, and that just opened up the floodgates pretty much. So that was my introduction into it. And I grew up a lot on like Stained and Korn and Slipknot, all the staples back in the day. Then I got into high school and then this like screamo and emo and metalcore and deathcore and punk rock, pop punk came out and punk hardcore punk and like A Day to Remember, Stick to Your Guns. Like I was all over the place. Basically, the moment I first got into rock music, like I could not stop. Like if it was heavy or if it had some form of aggression in it, I was listening to it. So I was all over the place.
I will name drop here. I'm not too proud to do that, but Alex Shelnut from A Day to Remember is a listener of the podcast. He'll hear that. He'll be very happy. So Alex, there you go. You got a another.
I saw them with Motionless in White and Bring Me the Horizon. I'll never forget the Day to Remember show because they were the Jeremy got in the big gerbil ball and he was like going all over the crowd. It was they put on such a good show. They are so much fun. I love them.
They are absolutely fantastic live. We've seen them I think three times now, as well as their acoustic tour, which was last winter. Alex was nice enough to hook the boys and I up with tickets and threw them drumsticks from the stage, like the stupidest stuff, dude. Like it's, you know, I should not live the life I lead. I tell you, it's insane. Motionless in White.
What's up?
I'm sorry. Motionless in White is actually from my area. They're from Scranton, about 35, 40 minutes from where I live here. My son actually plays travel baseball up there. Chris from Motionless is the lead singer. He's literally from, you know, from our region. Which is cool.
And he's another example. Like you ever seen an interview with him? He's like the sweetest guy. And he's a huge Swiftie. He went to saw Taylor Swift on her Eras tour, I think like three times, like while he was doing his tour. Like it just kind of proves the whole metal scene. Like these guys aren't as scary as you think they are. They're big sweethearts.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because like back, so you are obviously a little bit younger than me. Right. And I can tell just by dating, saying, okay, I grew up listening to Linkin Park. Like I was listening, like that was college for me and stuff. Right. Wow. So What's crazy is back when I was growing up, you know, and people think this is nuts, but like Ozzy Osbourne back in the day, people thought he was the devil, like legit. Mm-hmm. Like you were Satanist if you listened to Ozzy Osbourne, right? And you heard all the stories of biting the heads off bats and this, that, and the other, right? And now you see a dude like Ozzy who I mean is like legit, probably the, to use your term, the sweetest grandfather in the world right now. And it's just, you know, it's nuts to see how perceptions have changed towards that type of music. And maybe that's one of the reasons now why golf and that music kind of go hand in hand, you know, because perceptions have changed so much, and golf becoming more mainstream, heavier music becoming a little bit more mainstream. Maybe they finally hit that cultural divide where they started to meet.
I think I definitely agree. And I think it's helping now that a lot of these artists now are able to put out music independently and without the pressure of the label. So I feel like the labels kind of use bands and would dress them up a certain way and do certain things with them that were very inaccurate for who they, probably what they were trying to represent, where now they can just really be themselves and do their own thing. And starting to show people like, listen, like metal's not as scary and weird as everyone thinks it is. And you're starting to see a lot more of it. You're starting to see like rappers collaborate with metal musicians. Like Spirit Box just did that collab with Megan Thee Stallion, which is super cool. So you're starting to see everyone kind of leaning into rock a lot more. And I was joking with my wife about this the other day, because people are doing like a new metals coming back and everything like that. And I told her, I can't wait for all these people to hop on it when it becomes a trend. Because like all the bullying, all the people that made fun of me for all the music I listened to, you know, all of a sudden they're all going to be like, oh, have you heard of this band? I'm going to lose my mind over it. Because,
well, I tell my wife all the time, one of my biggest guilty pleasures in music is Limp Bizkit. Like I'm the biggest mark for Fred Durst. Like I freaking love the dude. And so my wife's in public health, and during the pandemic, they were playing somewhere. I don't remember exactly where, but I think they were in New York, and Fred Durst was up on stage and just expunging on the values of getting, you know, inoculated and vaccinated. My wife was like, who would have thought that we would live in a time when Fred Durst could be the face of public health?
Yep. And he's a golfer too, actually.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan. Chocolate Starfish was a great album. That was such a fun album. I love their first album. What was this? Not Significant Other. $3 Bill, y'all. $3 Bill was a great. Yeah, actually, that album was really good front to back. And most people don't listen to it because they know them more for the more popular stuff. But when they first came out, those first couple albums were really solid.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's it's funny because I did a radio show in college. It was called Generic As It Gets. And it was all punk, hardcore. We did a little industrial and then some ska music as well. And like the early Limp Bizkit stuff made it onto our show. And my buddy Larry, who I did it with, we were kind of really just really hesitant to let anything that didn't sound like that genre of music on. So when they went more towards like, you know, the DJ Lethal route where his beat started to protrude more into the music, you know, they kind of fell out of favor, not with myself, but with the show. But we used to get, I want to say it was Interscope or Epic that they were on, but we used to get stuff like promotional stuff for them all the time before they got big. And I have like in my crawl space, I've got, I mean, literally probably tens of thousands of CDs, and 1,000 of them are all promotional ones before these bands blew up that, you know, the record companies would send out to all these college radio stations to try to garner some airplay.
That's so cool. And it just shows you how much the music scene has changed completely. Because that used to be how bands had to do it. They were just putting things on blank CDs and handing them out to people. Like, listen, just hoping it gets in front of the right person at the right time kind of thing. And now everything, I mean, all you need is a laptop and you can record an album now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's absolutely insane. I think back, like, because I grew up in, like, the New York hardcore scene. You know, for me, you bring $20 to a show. I walked out with like, you know, 4 demo tapes and a t-shirt. And it was like the greatest. And I saw 9 bands play, you know, it was like the greatest night ever.
Yeah. Now you can't even buy a t-shirt for that at the merch shop for that at all. Like $20 gets you nothing for music anymore. Even the rock scene's always, in my opinion, been more affordable than any other genre. But now, I mean, there are shows in my area now that used to be like maybe $30. It's like $60, $70, $80 now. Yeah. So, I mean, good for them as long as the venues aren't ripping off the bands. But, it's changed a lot. Like, I don't know if you've heard the news about Ronnie Radke of Falling in Reverse, what he just did at his latest show. He basically, at the end of the show, he didn't sell any merch at the show because the venue wanted like 25% of it. And at the end of the show, he basically blasted the venue He's like, I love the fans. I love the city. I love all this. But this venue, band, stay away from this. They're going to rip you off and da-da-da-da-da. I was like, whoa. Like, that was – he's not afraid to be very blunt with
– I was just going to say that.
How they're treated. Yeah. So – and I'm not against it either because rock musicians, they don't get all the deals that, like, pop stars and everything like that get. It is much harder for them to make money than it is for someone like Taylor Swift. You know what I mean? You're not going to see a rock band in a commercial or at a football game getting praise. You know what I mean? So they need all that they can get. So I'm kind of – I'm excited for the rock industry being independent and lashing out a little bit because they work very hard and they definitely need to be compensated for it fairly.
Yeah, you know what's funny on that point? I have noticed, though, some – not really with the lyrics, but the rock music in some big-time commercials. And one of my favorite ones, I want to say it's a Pantene commercial, but they use a Transplants song. Which is Tim Armstrong and Skinhead Rob and Travis Barker. And there's someone else I can't remember in there. Yeah, but or Fructis. I think it's Fructis. That's what it is. And they use a friggin' Transplant song in their commercial. And it's like,
I need to look up the commercial.
Yeah, look up like Transplant song commercial. It's definitely a hair thing, I think. Now, I could be wrong and it ends up being for like a car dealership or something like that. Almost positive. That it's for like Fructis or Garnier or something along those lines. I don't know. You know.
That's super cool. I think Travis Barker has a lot to do with it because he kind of went mainstream with the Kardashian thing. And that's brought a lot of attention to like that punk scene, like Blink-182 coming back. That was like the most nostalgic album ever. If you did not tear up once while listening to that album, you weren't a real thing. When they dropped that music video, I forgot for which song it was, when they're doing
One
all
more
the
time.
Yeah. When they're showing everything, what they're singing about, like, if you didn't get emotional during that song, like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, I showed it to my wife. I'm like, you're going to cry. And she's like, no, I'm like, you're going to cry. And she's like, oh, my God. I'm like, yeah, it's weird because, like, we grew up with that. And now we're mid-30s and, like, Blink is still doing it. And they're all together again and touring and doing all this stuff after everything that band went through between, you know, the plane crash, cancer, Tom DeLonge. We thought he lost his mind, but he was right the whole time, apparently.
Yep.
It's just super cool to have them all back together again, making music, though.
Yeah, that was my wife's first concert ever in support of Cheshire Cat in 96. She saw them on Warped Tour.
That's cool. Good old Warped Tour. It always lands on the hottest day of the year.
And actually, Blink was my boys. Blink and Data. How about this for a first concert ever? Both my sons, their first concert ever was Blink and A Day to Remember. Double bill.
Cool. What was your first concert ever?
My first concert ever was Metallica, Danzig, and Suicidal Tendencies. I was 13 years old.
That would have been awesome. So mine's really embarrassing. Mine was NSYNC. No joke.
And you've definitely had the glow up in musical taste since NSYNC.
Oh, now I will say this: if NSYNC did a reunion tour, I would absolutely go.
Is it Backstreet Boys that's doing one? I think
Backstreet Boys have been doing it for years now. It was like the original like boy band feud. Which one do you like better? And I just liked NSYNC better. So,
Gotcha.
Yeah, my mom took me and my grade school girlfriend to the concert.
That's awesome. That's hilarious. Yeah. That's a great story.
So cringy though. Like I think about it way too much. Let's put it that way.
NSYNC left an emotional mark on your life there.
Oh yeah, I had the posters, everything. It was bad. It's so weird though. I used to be like the biggest NSYNC fan, and now like. My room is like lined up with like creepy gothic art and like metal bands and stuff. Like I did a total 180.
Well, look, I mean, Justin Timberlake is an enormous golfer too. He owns a course in Tennessee.
Yeah, he's a good golfer too. He's a
very good golfer.
And him and Tiger are trying to start a place in
the city. Yeah, New York City. Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, well, they've got there's one in the city right now, and I think you're right. There's one going over in the UK.
The one they're pushing back in the one at St. Andrews because they're afraid. I don't know if you've ever, I've played St. Andrews. I've done the whole St. Andrews golf.
Yeah, no, I have not.
Old Town St. Andrews is very much like an old town. Like it's very not modern, let's put it that way. And I think they're afraid of trying to, what they're going to bring in with it. They're trying to keep the class there. So I understand it because I wouldn't change a thing about that town. It was amazing. The people were so great. You can walk everywhere. Like, I don't change a thing about that town.
Now, when you played that, was that something where you had to get in line for a ticket or did you do it based on one of those companies that books a tee time for you?
So we had tee times all over Scotland, except for St. Andrews, because you have to like book it a year plus in advance or something like that at the time. And maybe even still so. And we got done playing. We played 36 every single day. So what we did is we played 36 a day before. Then we got up like crack of dawn. It was like 3 or 4 in the morning. We sat in line, got in, but our tee time, they're like, when we're ready to call you, you better be ready. So we actually went and played 18 holes waiting for the call. Then we got the call. Then we came back and then we played 18 holes. We're the last group out at St. Andrews. So we're coming in as the sun was coming down.
Oh, wow. So I'm assuming that's during the summertime you went?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And just out of curiosity, like how many people were ahead of you in line when you got there at that time?
Oh gosh. There was at least 20 to 30 people.
Oh geez.
Yeah. We were in line going, I don't think we're going to get in. Like, well, like I said, we were the last group. We barely got in. And that was the only time slot that we had that we could have fit in to play St. Andrews too. So if it didn't happen that day, it wasn't going to happen for us. So.
And now what did that cost St. Andrews to play? Is that one of those ones that's semi-reasonable? It's like 200 or so, or?
It's expensive. I want to say it was like, I can't remember now. I want to say it was maybe 350.
I think that's fair. I think fair. For, yeah. Well, you know?
I've said this a million times, and I'm not bashing golf courses here in the States when I say this, but you know, I have local courses around here that you go and play. They pay like $85 or $100 for a round of golf. And I'm like, who do you think you are? Cause I've played in Ireland, Scotland, and Portugal, and I played major championship courses, Ryder Cup courses, and you're paying maybe more than what you're paying here, but like not, you would think it would be like, $700 a round kind of thing. It's actually relatively affordable considering the quality of golf that you're getting. Then you come back here and you're paying $85 for a course that doesn't, can't even host an amateur event. You're just like, this is garbage. This is so unfair.
Yeah, the pricing structure in the U.S. is just, you know, I say it's something that needs to be looked at, but it's never going to, because these courses, especially now since the pandemic, are just making money hand over fist. So it's unfortunate. And a lot of times, like during the pandemic, people are like, nah, just wait it out, dude. Like, just chill. You're getting overhyped over these things. It's going to go back. Like, nothing ever reverts back in price, ever. That never happens. Once it's up there, it's up there.
My dad has a saying, it's nothing will be as cheap as it is right now. It always gets more expensive. And they're booking tee times. The prices aren't going to go down at all. Tee sheets are always fully booked around here. They could charge more if they wanted to, and people would still pay it. It's just pandemic. I mean, it was an awful thing. But what it did for golf, it blew it up. Because it's the one thing that people could do, still go out and do. So people, a lot of people picked up the game because of COVID.
Yeah, I remember like everybody and their mother started a podcast during COVID. Mm-hmm. And so it's funny because we had this, I started this in 2019. Our COVID year was nuts. We were doing media at the Players Championship the night when they said, hey, the next round is going to be players and media only, no fans. And we got a text from the PGA Tour about 11:30 at night and said, it is completely canceled. The season will be completely canceled. Like, get on a plane, go home. I got the last flight out of Jacksonville into Philly. I was with my buddy Derek from California. He got like the last one out into LA. It was insane. And then everyone started a podcast, right? Now all those podcasts live in the ether and then no one does them anymore, you know, because they had to go back to their regular lives. Yeah, it was absolutely crazy for golf. It was nuts.
Yeah, no, I worked for a company called Curated. And I came on right after the pandemic, and they were telling us, because it's an online fitting service. So basically people hop online and it's like going to Amazon, but you get to talk to a real person.
Okay.
Fit you for golf equipment. You get a 2-week buy and try with it as long as it's stock option kind of thing too. So you can get the clubs, you don't like them, you can send it back full refund. But they were popping. Like they took off during COVID. I'm not going to say the company wouldn't be as big as it is now if it wasn't for that, but because of the pandemic and people not being able to go to the store and do things, or get fit for golf equipment, they just absolutely tore it up. They were making money hand over fist.
That's pretty cool, actually. I mean, how do they work like those measurements and everything?
So it's we do like static fittings where it's like wrist to floor and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's cool because they hire golf. We're called golf experts, and I'm very fortunate to work with a lot of guys that have a lot of good information. And I've been playing golf long enough now where I know if you hit the ball in the heel all the time that the clubs are, you know, it should be a little bit shorter for you. If you're hitting on the toe all the time, maybe, you know, there's ways of asking people about where they're hitting the ball and stuff like that, where you can figure it out. in most people, I think it's like something like 85% of golfers are actually in like just stock golf clubs. Not many people need length over or length under kind of thing. And for lie angle, I tell everybody for most, always go get it checked at a pro shop anyways. Find a good club worker and always get your lie angles done there. Manufacturers are good about it, but things slip through the cracks with them sometimes. So sure. if you're going to get lie angles and stuff like that done, take it to a pro shop. They'll make sure it's right. And they'll, I'm not going to say they'll do a better job, but that's at least even me. And I get all my clubs specced out. I'm very specific with my lie angles and everything like that. I always still get them double checked by somebody else.
Yeah. And those change over time too. You know?
Yeah. 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 The clubs will bend back and everything like that too. I mean, winter time is the perfect time to take your clubs and have them looked at and make sure they're where they need to be kind of thing.
Yeah. I think a lot of people don't realize that, you know, especially like you're in Missouri, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So you've got winters kind of like me in Northeast PA where, you know, we'll go 2-3 months where the course is covered with snow. We can't go outside and play. Everything's simulated golf or we're hitting inside bays or whatnot. That's a great advice. You know, get those checked. It's like, you know, it's like getting your oil checked in your car or getting your tires checked before winter hits.
Yeah, there is maintenance with golf clubs, believe it or not. And I think people overlook it a lot. Like, clean your grips. And like, one of my biggest pet peeves, and I see people do this on the golf course, is they hit a wedge shot and they go, oh, it didn't spin. I'm like, did you wipe off your grooves before you hit that shot? Yeah. It drives me nuts. My dad almost does it to spite me at this point, I think, because like there's things you need to do for your golf clubs to make sure that they're still performing the same. This would make the pros so good. They take all the variables out. You know what I mean? Yeah. If you're taking the game seriously, they're trying to improve. Having that little piece of dirt on your club face is going to make a big difference. So if you're not cleaning your grooves or cleaning your grips or checking your lie angles, like you could be putting a good swing on it every time and not getting the results you want just because you're not doing those things.
Yeah, my youngest son is notorious for having like caked on dirt and I'm like, dude, come on. Or he'll rub it off with the brush, but there's still all those remnants. Now, my oldest son, who, you know, is very good at being recruited for college, is like, you know, he's meticulous with it. You know what I mean? As you would expect that to be. I'm kind of somewhere in the middle. I spit on my club head and then wipe it off. I throw it in the bag. You know, I'm good.
Yeah. there's a lot of things too, like even with like changing golf balls, like some people, that's kind of a luxury. And I understand, I'm very fortunate where I get a lot of free stuff, free golf balls. But, you know, they did a study where they were rolling a used golf ball compared to a new golf ball.
Yes. Like, well, I've seen that.
You saw it?
Yeah.
Used golf ball would not roll out as much. You know what I mean? So that just shows you, like, you could be putting a good roll on it, but since you're using a golf ball that's beat to death, you're not making putts. But if you're using a new golf ball, then I think that's also why a lot of people, though, you'll always see them, like, they'll, like, have the golf ball they use on the green. It drives me crazy, but...
That's like the 30 handicap guy always has it. Like, oh, I'm going to hit this ball in the water hole because it might get wet.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just like, come on, man. Like, just get better.
Oh my God. I love that. I love that. You know, it's funny because like hand in the air, like I'm guilty. Like we just got back from Pinehurst and I played the first ball before I lost. And I think I played 58 holes without losing it. Dude, it had sap on it. It hit a tree, it hit a car path. I mean, it was a vice ball. So part of the green was like rubbed off on one side. Like it looked awful. And my son's like, dude, dad, like, what are you doing? Just, you got plenty of golf balls, man. Like, switch it. I'm like, nope, I'm playing this till I lose it. And then eventually I lost it. But, you know.
See, though, but when you go 18 holes without losing a ball, there is a thing where you're like, how long can I ride this out? Like, how long can I play this golf ball before I lose it? And then you start taking on different shots where you usually hit driver. You're like, I don't want to lose this golf ball. I'm going iron off the tee this time. I don't want to lose the ball. You actually kind of play
better.
Sometimes
that works out even better for you, you know?
Yeah. You're actually starting to play better because you're protecting the golf ball. It's a weird backwards hack kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a stupid like $2.50 ball. It's it's insane what the mind will do in this game. Where do you play in and around Missouri? I've been out a few times. I'm an enormous St. Louis Cardinals fan, so usually once a summer we go out to Busch Stadium for a homestand. Now I've played outside of Brandt at like Top of the Rock, Mountaintop. Mm-hmm. Ozark National, I think the name of the other one is there, and then something else, but that's the only place in Missouri that I've played.
So I have a couple courses that are like right around the corner from my house that I go to. One is called the Falls, the other one's Links at Dardenne. Neither one of them are really difficult courses, like they're just really, really close. The Falls is actually hosting an amateur series event this spring, so I'm gonna be playing that course a lot. hopefully throughout the winter when I can sneak rounds in just because I want to play in the event. And I just want to play that course to death so I'm comfortable on it. Because there's a couple of tee shots on that course that I absolutely loathe. Like, just do not set up well for me at all. My favorite courses are actually both in Illinois. So in St. Louis. Yes. I actually grew up in Southern Illinois. I just moved to Missouri for tax purposes because it's just more affordable out here. Gas is significantly cheaper. But there's a golf course called Ambrier where I was a member at when I was in high school. It's a public course. It's a links style course. I love the course because there's no houses on it. The owners will not allow anybody to build on it. And I'm a big fan of that. I don't like houses on courses. It's been ranked like the number one public course in Illinois for I don't know how many years. It's just a fantastic course. It's always in great shape. It used to be tougher. The rough out there used to be brutal, but for pace of play reasons, they've kind of taken it back a little bit. Other than that, there's a golf course in Alton down. Do you know where Edwardsville is by chance?
I'm gonna say no. Although if I look at it on a map and I see it, like maybe the only other course I was gonna tell you I know out there is Gateway National.
Yeah, I was gonna touch on that one next, actually. Okay. Yeah, I played there earlier this year. But there's a course called Spencer T. Olin. It's a Palmer course. I love Palmer courses in general, but this course to me, I can go through every hole in my head and it shouldn't be that difficult of a course. I can go out there and shoot 34 on the front, but something always happens to me on that course where I cannot put up a good round. I don't know why the course is out to get me. I have no idea. It's infuriating to me. I think the lowest score I've ever posted out there was a 75 and I was mad about it. It was just, it's just one of those courses that always gets me, but it's always in great shape. And it's super affordable. Like, they always have great deals out there. And that's another reason why I appreciate the course. I love Gateway, but it is kind of expensive to play. It's not a course you can play on a regular basis kind of thing. But I love the layout. I love the course. I love that it doesn't go back to the clubhouse. I've always liked courses that are like that. Like, you're getting further and further away from the clubhouse and you work your way back kind of thing. Yeah. This is traditional link style golf kind of thing. And I prefer link over Parkland anyways. But Gateway is another great course as well. But Spencer T and Ambrier would be my favorites. We have Belle Reve out here. I still have never played it, which drives me crazy.
Is that private or public?
Oh, that's private. That's where
what I thought. Yeah.
PGA Championship at. And I know people out there. I've never gotten out there. My schedule is never lined up to be able to go out there. And there's a private course that right down the road from me called Lake Forest. That's really, really, really nice. Like, fast greens nice. It's hard to find really challenging courses around here, I feel like. That is definitely one of them.
Now, I know that Gateway National is all bent grass, and that's kind of like their big thing. Are the courses by you, are they normally Bermuda?
You see a lot of
Bermuda. Or are they Zoysia?
You see a lot of Zoysia.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, because when I played at, I think, the one outside of Branson, I think it was the Ozark one, or Buffalo Ridge. That's what it was, Buffalo Ridge Springs. That one was all Zoysia. That's the first course I ever played that had Zoysia grass. And I just fell in love with, like, the way the ball sits up on the fairway. Like, it's insane. It's like playing off a AstroTurf.
Yeah. No, the course I grew up on was a little 9-hole course called Elmwood. There's not a single flat lie out there. So I grew up naturally just being able to hit off of anything. But fairways are all Zoysia. It sits up perfectly. It's absolutely beautiful. Greens are like shag carpets. They're terrible, but fairways are absolutely
great. That. Yeah, we got a 9-holer out here called Indian Mountain, and there's no USGA rating whatsoever. The guy owns it. It's been in the community for forever. I think 1929 or something like that. Mm-hmm. Still's never got a rating or anything like that. And they just finally started putting money into it. It's where our high school team plays as well. So it's our home course for that. And it's crazy because, it's like you said, it's one of those courses, like, you can go through and be like, oh my God, I should be able to shoot 30. Like, I should be able to shoot 6 under par like that. But you can get sideways so quickly on some of these little quirky courses if you don't know the place.
Elmwood has a hole number 4, woods lining down the left side. And there's woods lining down the left, and it goes out of bounds, goes up on the right to about 250-ish. And it got to the point where I'm just like, I'm bailing right. I got so tired of my round getting ruined by that hole that I would aim at the next fairway. I go, I just need to make sure I clear it. I remember being a kid because I couldn't hit it. I didn't start hitting the ball long until the last few years. But my goal is like, I need to get it out there at least 250, clear those trees. I'll deal with it after that. But there's some holes out there that just will, if you – you keep snap hooking it in the trees, guess what? You just went from, oh, I'm going to shoot 36, 35 to 42 very fast.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've shot 45s out there and I've shot 31s out there. I have no idea no idea what's going to happen when I'm out there half the time.
Yeah, that's golf. I mean, you know, that's golf. You've been talking a lot about the PGA show next year, and I want to kind of pick your brain on that. You know, I know you're going to that. It's something I've never been to. It always looks interesting. I'm definitely a little bit of an introvert, you know, and something like that. I just look at them like, man, there's so many frigging people. I don't want to be around that many people. You know,
it's a lot of people.
It is. It's insane. But I'm just kind of curious to pick your brain on, you know, what your thoughts are about going there. What do you want to get out of it? What do you plan on seeing? What do you plan on doing there?
So I love the demo day. I love hitting new golf clubs. It's another benefit of the company that I work for is they send me golf clubs to hit and I do some content for them. I will be hitting absolutely every golf club there. So that's the number one thing I'm the most excited about. I will be filming a lot of content there, but there's so many cool people there. Like Martin Borgmeyer was there last year. Roger Steele was there. The DOD King is going to be there this year. So there's a lot of golf influencers there. It's just a good time. I'm a trained extrovert is what I like to try to call myself because I wait tables as well. So I'm very good with people, but when like in my spare time, like you'll find me at home doing my own thing. I people enough. Let's put it that way. But it gets a little claustrophobic there. But what I'm trying to get out of is one, hitting everything and learning the technology, just because I am a fitter and I like to stay up to date with what everything that's coming out. Two, there's the exhibition day, which I'm only going to go one day this year because you don't need 2 days, in my opinion, unless you're working it and you're doing things there where you get to see like all the new simulator equipment coming out. So you get to go check out like what Full Swing is doing and all this, Rapsodo will be there and different apparel brands and swing aids and all this stuff. Like everybody is there. So you see a lot of cool stuff there, everything from energy drinks to coffee to, like I said, swing aids to simulators. You see some wild stuff there. So it's always just something interesting to kind of pick and see there. I'm just looking forward to meeting a bunch of people because I talk to a lot of these people via social media, but I don't actually get to meet with them and talk to them. So I'm looking forward to actually shaking some hands, like putting faces to names, shooting some content and all of that stuff too. So it's a good time. If you like to party and I like to have a good time, it's a party, man. Because everyone that's in Orlando, they're all golfers. So everywhere you go, it's just golfers. So you know who you're running into kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there a lot of golf being played out there or is it mostly just centered around the show itself and showing off their wares?
So for me personally, I will be playing golf when I'm there partially because I'm in Missouri and it's hard to play golf right now because short days and it's cold and I'll be in Orlando. So I'm absolutely playing golf. So I'm going up there a day or so early. I'm playing golf one day, going to the show the next, doing half the show the next day, playing golf that afternoon. And going to Pop Stroke that night, which is so much fun. I don't know if you've ever been to Pop Stroke yet. It is.
No, I mean, I've seen it on Instagram and all that stuff, but never played myself there.
It's funny because maybe I'm looking too into it, but you can tell Tiger designed it because some of these, like these putt-putt holes look super straightforward, but they're not. There's like three or four different ways to get the ball in the hole. Like you can go up on the hill and ride it back. You can go right at it. Mm-hmm. Like you can tell Tiger designed it. It's really cool. And then I'm going to be playing golf the next day after that. Then I'll leave the following day. So my goal is to play at least 3 rounds of 18 while I'm out there.
Nice. That's fantastic. I mean, yeah, especially in the dead of winter, that's a great thing to have at your disposal.
Oh yeah. And then in February, my company hosts a summit where the top 80 experts get to go to. So we're actually partners with all of these people like Callaway, Titleist, TaylorMade. They all will show up and they're going to be hosting us at Talking Stick in Arizona, where we actually get to sit there and so the PGA show is very busy. You don't actually get to have the conversations about the tech because they're talking to a million different people. But there we're actually going to get like one-on-one time with all these brands and all these reps. And I'm going to be going over all the new clubs and what they're doing and what's different this year and all that other stuff. So I'll be doing that in Arizona. And I usually go down there for about a week and I play, and my dad goes with me and we'll do 36 a day, like 3 or 4 days in a row before the show. Or before the summit, and then I'll do 18 holes at the summit, and then we just pound golf balls for 2 or 3 days straight. And then we go to Top Golf one night too. it's a lot of fun, dude.
I love that. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about kind of like the foundation of the goat farm, because that's literally one, I believe the way that I kind of found you. So we call our course the goat track, right? Because it's usually in such poor shape, but then, you know, we spin it and say, well, it is the GOAT, like the greatest of all time track. Mm-hmm. So it has kind of that, you know, double meaning. if you will. And like my son all the time tells people, it's like, oh, I play Indy Mountain Country Club. They're like, oh wow, where's that? Like, I'm a member of Marion and, you know, Oakmont and Philly Cricket Club. Like, ah, well, it's a small little course. You probably, it's real private. You probably wouldn't have heard about it. But then you come out, you know, with the Goat Farm. So what was the antithesis of that? Where did that start up?
So my nickname has always been Goat, but not for a good reason. So I remember being a little kid. I had been all of maybe 10 years old, maybe even younger than that. I used to be a terrible putter, and I had like a 4-foot putt to win a match. It was me and my grandpa versus two other guys. My grandpa looked at me, being on my team, you should have supported me, but he just, not how it went down. And there's an old expression, you can be the hero or the goat. Needless to say, I missed the putt. So I had a million nicknames as a kid, but Goat Boy stuck. I'm still Goat Boy to all of my dad's friends. Nobody ever calls me Patrick or PJR. It is Goat. I used to hate the name because it just reminded me of that putt that I missed. And I still think about it.
Yeah.
And then I was too young to realize GOAT was an acronym for greatest of all time.
Which honestly, that's only something over like the last 15, 20 years. Like, just so people know, like, I'm old enough to know that, like, no one was ever called that before.
See, yeah, I didn't know that it was, that it stood for that until I was later on in life. Then I started to spin it in a positive way. The Goat Farm came from, I want to say, my team lead at Curated, because I'm Mr. Motivation. I like to hype people up. I try to support everybody. That's actually something I'm going to actually have to take a step back from on Instagram a little bit, because I have just too many brand partnerships. I can't do everything for everyone kind of thing. So
very powerful to say no.
Yeah. So I need to learn to start saying no. And actually my goal in the next year, social media wise, which we'll get to this later, is to actually solidify like one partnership with an apparel company kind of thing. Cause I love helping these people out, but like I'm struggling to do, I have like 8 brands of different brands of shirts, and there's 7 days in a week. I can't, you know what I mean? But I kind of have like this cult of positivity of people that follow me because they like my positivity and my motivation, inspirational, whatever you want to call it. So my boss started calling it the Goat Farm, and it just stuck. And I just kind of stole the idea from him. And I just started, people that followed me, I started calling them, hey, you're a member of the Goat Farm now. So it just stuck. And I thought it was super cool, because now I have people reaching out to me going like, hey, I like your Goat Farm thing. Like, what do you think I should call my followers? So it's kind of picking up some like a trend here where everybody's like trying to name their followers now and create their own group of people. So I won't get the credit for it in 20 years, but I'll know what I did.
Nice. Yeah, I like that. I like that. And going back, yeah, like saying no to people is super difficult, right? At times, but just super empowering. We work with two brands, Swanee's and Gas House Golf. Shout out to both of them. You hear the ads at the end of the podcast. But that's it. You know, that's it. And I've gotten a lot of items in the mail. Let's say that. A lot of items in the mail that people would be like, hey, we'd love if you could support that. And I'm just, you know, I said, hey, it's like, it's not bad. Like, it really isn't bad. It's not my style. And unfortunately, you know, I'm in bed with two others. There's not enough room in this bed for one more, you know?
Yeah. See, for me, I love getting the free apparel. And it was cool because I'm trying to break away from super big brand names, because there's so many good small brands out there, up and coming brands, even Swanee's, even though they are a big brand. I wouldn't say they're like Nike kind of thing. There's
brands
that I think this should be being lifted up right now. And I think there's almost not a monopoly, but like, you know, a handful of brands seem to own everything. And I was able to get rid of all of my name brand shirts for all these small Instagram brands, which I thought was absolutely cool. So I'm very proud of that. But I'm at the point now where I'm like, I would really like to just have one brand partnership with an apparel company, just because it simplifies my content too. And I want to start having a little bit more loyalty to one person, instead of one day I'm posting for this brand, one day I'm posting for this brand. I would much rather focus on playing golf and doing my thing, opposed to like trying to plug as many brands into my content as possible.
Oh yeah. That's amen to that. It's so much easier to streamline yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't have that ability right now. And it gets a little stressful, because I have a couple brands now that I'm sitting on. I'm like, I just haven't been able to film content. Well, it's cold and short days and I work a lot. And it's just one of the things, like, I'm sorry, I haven't posted something for you guys. There's a laundry list of things I'm supposed to be doing right now.
Yeah. Well, talk to me a little bit then about the social media plans for 2024, because, you know, we've talked off air about how you're looking to really kind of up that game and just to preface that, I don't think, I know people don't understand how labor intensive social media is because they see a quick 15 minute video or they see a post once a day or something like that. But unfortunately, there's a lot of planning that goes behind some of that stuff. Now, I'll be completely, you know, upfront and honest, and my brands that support us know this, and the followers know this, and I think they like it, is, you know, none of my stuff is curated, right? It is just, it is what it is. There's no editing. There's no editing to this video. There's no editing to the sound. There's no editing to the podcast. Nothing gets cut out. You know, it's warts and all type deal. But you see some, and look, I mean, I'm super impressed by some of these people out here that can craft a 30-second video that looks like it's shot by NBC. You know, I just don't have that ability. So talk to me a little bit about where your social media presence is heading into the new year.
So my number one goal for next year, so I have the Parnon podcast I'm doing right now, and actually we're going to be recording a new episode tonight. And then I'm starting a new podcast with two other guys the week after Christmas we start recording. Going to start dropping episodes in 2024. So I'm going to be doing two podcasts, which sounds like a lot, but they're kind of different formats, and I don't think it's going to be as bad as it sounds. And plus, one's on Saturday, one's on Sunday kind of thing, so I can split it up. And during the winter, it's perfect because it's hard for me to get out anyway. So social media-wise, I'm looking to really find, like I said, partnerships with one person or a couple of different brands. Like, I'm a Callaway guy. I have a small partnership with them where I play their clubs exclusively. I still demo everything, and I still will test everything, but I will play Callaway clubs. Plus, I'm a Callaway guy. I prefer their clubs. My goal is to get in front of as many people as possible. I really want to do some of these competitive matches that you see on Instagram where you see people going 9-hole battles. I want to do that. I just don't have anybody around me. So I'm hoping when I'm traveling that I can book some, like, backlog some content and do that kind of thing. My goal is just to get in front of as many people as possible. I want to do more whole vlogs, and I want to really start going back to the metal thing a lot. I kind of got away from it just to kind of pick up some traction with social media, because playing deathcore in your backswing isn't the most appealing thing when you're scrolling through Instagram, probably. So I had to reel people in a little bit. But yeah, no, I'm just trying to get in front of as many people as possible. And you're right. It is. I used to be the first person to criticize influencers. It is not. It is time consuming. If you want to do it the correct way and get good at it, it's time consuming. It's knowing what colors to use and what captions to use and how to do call to actions. And it's not easy posting videos and trying to build a page. It's not an easy thing. And you almost have to start a community, which is why I did the goat farm thing and why my page has started to grow, is because I have all these people. Like, I'll spend an hour, and I hate to say this out loud, I'll spend at least an hour on social media, liking stuff, commenting stuff, sharing stuff, messaging people, and taking care of my network of people just so that my page does well and everyone else's page does well. You know what I mean? It's kind of time consuming, and I don't like being in front of a screen that long. But in order to do it, it is a lot more labor intensive than people think it is. And also filming your round of golf, like, you're kind of turning into that guy that carries a stick around with them and puts in the ground. And I know how that looks, but it just kind of is what it is kind of thing.
Yeah, I got to the point where I used to do, like, you know, sometimes I'd record a hole or, you know, 3-4 or whatever. If I'm doing a match with somebody, you know, you record a few shots here and there. But one of the things I found, like, as much as I loved it, as much as I love the feedback from people, I had to just cut it out because it was taken away from my enjoyment when I was playing golf. Right. And then golf became a job, and I never wanted golf to become a job. Like, you hear that old saying, when you work in the golf industry, you don't play much golf because you're so busy doing golf, but you're not playing. And I always wanted this to lead towards playing golf.
Yes. And that's actually the reason why I've never become a teaching pro. And I've thought about getting my card or working at a golf course, because everyone always asks me, like, well, why don't you go do this? I'm like, you ask any of them, they don't get to play golf. And I'm personally, when it comes to golf, the number one thing I love the most is I love competing. I loved playing amateur golf. Before I had kids, I was doing it. And then right when I was getting ready to get back into it, my wife got pregnant again. So that put it back another couple of years. So I'm hoping this spring will be the year that I start going back to amateur events. I love playing golf and I love competing. That's my number one thing. I would give up the content and everything in a heartbeat if I knew I could compete full time. So it's just the content thing came for me. It's like, well, I love golf and I'm not competing. Well, maybe I can do something with this. And last year I was able to go to the Callaway launch event, and I had no Instagram page as of, I mean, I think I maybe started it this time last year. I've only had my page for about a year now. And it, I'm very grateful for what my for how much my page has grown, kind of thing. But I only started the social media thing because I was working with all these brands and I was doing all this cool stuff. And I thought I'd share it with people because I wasn't competing. So I am kind of concerned when I start getting back into competitive golf, what that's going to do to my content. But I'll cross that bridge when I come to it, kind of thing. But I hit golf balls in my garage every night so I can turn that into content too. I posted in my stories and I just want to break down the walls a little bit with golf because I don't look like a golfer. I'm covered in tattoos, long hair, I have gauges. I listen to obnoxiously heavy music. I want people to see that and just go, well, anybody can play golf. You know what I mean? Because when I tell people I play golf, they don't believe me. They're like, really? Like, yeah. Are you any good? And I'm just like, actually, I hate saying I'm good because I sound like the guy's like, oh yeah, I'm good. But like, I'm actually a good golfer. And they're like, they look at that. You can see like, you can see them processing the information. They're looking at me. They're trying to put me as a golfer in their head at the same time. It doesn't compute. So I would really like to start breaking down that wall a little bit and doing the metal stuff with golf and showing anybody, everybody can play this game. Tattoos are not like, it's no longer the game that it used to be. And Live Golf is actually kind of helping with that a little bit, which I kind of hate to say that out loud a little bit, but golf is changing for the better, I think. And I think we need to get more people into it. We need to get more metalheads into the scene. It needs more diversity from the personality perspective. We need more eccentric people out there. Like even people in the tour, like watching the interviews with the pros, it gets very, I watch it because I love the information, but it's very dry to watch these guys talk. Golf needs more personality on tour and just in general in the presence of golf. You know what I mean? It just doesn't have it, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, I mean, if you've got 100 sheep out in the field and they're all white sheep, right? Like nothing stands out. But if you've got, you know, a donkey amongst those sheep, like you're like, damn, look at that donkey.
Yeah, it's completely different.
Like, yeah, things that are different, that's what people remember. Mm-hmm. It's funny. I've people ask me all the time. They're like, well, do you ever get any pushback on the courses, like in the summertime when you're wearing? Because I have full sleeves, my legs are done, you know. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, I don't, because like I'm a staunch supporter of kind of the old guard in the game, while still realizing that it needs to be fresh and new. So I kind of like straddle that line. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I get a lot from people is when they see me and they see me dress nicely and they see the way, you know, I behave on the course, the way my boys behave and the way that we play, I get a lot of like the old guys will come up to me like, hey, you know, I got a tattoo as well. Like, oh, okay. Awesome. I'm like, hey, that's cool. And they're like, yeah, I got it in college. You can't see it, it's on my shoulder, you know, but it's like that little bond that you have with that person. And they think like, well, I'm badass too. Like, yeah, I saw a guy all tattooed up, but honey, I'm badass too, because I got that one on my ankle, right?
Yeah, well, it's just making people less self-conscious about it too. And I think that's the cool thing about being, you know, having tattoos and stuff like that is the people of the generations before me that had them, that like have them hidden, they're starting to go, oh, I don't have to hide it. Because everyone used to be like, oh, are you going to regret those? You're going to regret those when you're older. I'm like, dude, if I'm 80 years old and my biggest concern is the tattoos I have, I am winning. All right. If I'm perfectly healthy and I have no drama or no issues in my life, like, man, my tattoos, like, I don't think they realize like how fortunate of a person you have to be to have that as your problem. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, but yeah, no, I love, another thing I like about it too, just being from a competitor perspective, is I'm so underestimated on a golf course.
Oh, people, God. Yeah.
People see me walk up long hair, all this stuff. I have metal music in my cart. They're just like, this freaking guy. And then I go up there and hit a golf ball. They're like, what just happened? Kind of thing. So, it kind of, I'm able to put people on their heels a little bit because of it too. So that's
the, yeah, I love that. I love me. I absolutely love breaking perceptions of people. Mm-hmm. Like I get, it's one of my favorite things in the world is breaking stereotypes.
Yeah. No, it was almost a deliberate goal of mine when I started getting tattoos. It was like, I really just want to prove everybody wrong. Cause there's always the stereotypes behind these things. I'm like, it's literally ink on skin. It doesn't change your personality. Right. It doesn't change anything about you. Like, I really want to show people like you can be successful. You can be a good golfer. You can be all those things and be covered in tattoos. It's okay. Like, go get that tattoo. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to go get it. Cause like, oh, I'm a golfer. People are going to think, like, if anything, just show them that they're wrong. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And get good tattoos too. All right.
No. Everyone has, I have a couple that I'm not, I want to say I'm not proud of. I like the tattoos. They just weren't well done, but they came with age and money. Cause I just wanted tattoos. Yeah, so yeah. Like, oh, give me this cheap tattoo that I would like paste them together kind of thing. But, I like stories. They tell a story, though. You know what I mean? Like, even if you look at your bad tattoos, you look at it going, I remember that. I was young and dumb, and I thought that was the coolest thing at the time. I was super into this band. Or because I think I have a tattoo on my ribs for a Perfect Circle. I had their logo on my ribs. It was like first rib tattoo, and I thought I was like the biggest badass for getting my ribs done. And I'm like, oh, it didn't hurt that bad. So then I went and got my whole side done, rib piece, and that was like some of the worst pain that I've ever been in my entire life. It was
The ribs suck. The ribs absolutely suck.
I'm working on a full back piece now, which unfortunately I had to pause it because just it's expensive and money and life happens kind of thing. But tailbone, I can see why girls in the 90s would get that tattoo and never got another one again. It is the worst pain I have ever had because you can feel it going throughout your entire body.
It just reverberates.
It's awful. Well, I can see why girls got that one tattoo. Like, I'm never getting another one again. I'm like, totally understand. Like,
you feel it in your skull.
Yeah. It's when you feel a needle going in your back and you feel your fingertips zapping, you have no control of your body. It's just I'm glad that part of the tattoo is over. Let's put it that way.
All right. I'm gonna get you out of here on two questions. All right. Normally I don't like asking questions, you know, in the interview. It's more of a flow type thing, but What is your favorite tattoo that you have on you?
Oh, God. Oh, I don't know. I love all of them. I really like what I did with this half sleeve here. It was like the first thing that I did, and I got a bunch of things like kind of like put together randomly. Then they pulled it together. And I like this because it started off as I used to be a very – like this positive persona that I have, not even a persona, the positive person I am now, I wasn't always this way. I was a very much a cynic. I was a very nihilistic person. I still love dark humor though. But it started off with, this was like, I like to call it like my spiritual journey. All these tattoos were realizations that I had along the way of becoming a better person. So I would say these are a favorite from a philosophical perspective. Now I have my quads done and they're super cool. I have a shaman on one, and then I have like a Nordic like witch on the other one, kind of like a seer kind of thing. And I love, those are probably my favorites, I think, just from an aesthetic perspective.
Okay.
Because they're just super cool. They're done like that old, like the thick bold lines, American traditional, but the guy has like his own like style with it kind of thing. I love my quads. My back is sick too, though. It's like this big vulture like eating this half dead girl, and it's like roses on my butt. It's like wild. It's crazy tattoo. People see it and they're horrified. I love it.
All right, that's awesome. So part two, this is even more difficult to answer because I'm not sure I could answer this on the spot. I am going to put you on the spot here. Your top three favorite bands.
Oh gosh, this is always like cycling.
Right. And you've got to think, I always think about it this way. Like you're to pat myself on the back a little bit, like you're in a podcast that a lot of people are going to listen to, and they may be put on to some of the music that you're going to put out there in the golf universe right now.
So I got to say Architects is always in the top three.
Okay.
I love Architects. I love Sam Carter. I love Fry Vocals. That whole album, All Our Gods Have Abandoned Us, is such a good album. It's such a sad story behind it, too. Love that band. Gosh. I gotta say, Sleep Token, they're newer for me, but I love that band because they have everything in their music, from synths to kind of funky vibes, a little bit of rap, some metalcore. They kind of do everything. Gosh, but a third band. It's like, I listen to so much. I have music ADHD half the time. Trying to think of a band like I never skip.
That's a good way to think about it.
I think a band like if a band that comes on, like, oh, I have to listen to this kind of thing.
Right, right.
You know, I'm going to answer this, and like I'm going to send you a message like 5 minutes later, giving you a different band. I guarantee you. You know, I probably put Silent Planet up there. I really like Silent Planet. I like Garrett. I think he's a great writer and like poet. He's a very intelligent guy, and they just kind of mix like philosophy and beauty with like metal so well, because it sounds so aggressive. But when you go and read the lyrics, the guy's a lyrical genius. Mm-hmm. He's like the sweetest guy on earth. I talked to him a little bit. He's like the nerdiest, like happiest, like guy all the time. So like meeting the bands definitely has like an influence on that for me.
Pitosaur, because I want to put like Polaris up there as well. I love Polaris. I mean, I could go on for days on this one, man. Oh, Spirit Box. Oh, just Spirit Box. See, this, like Spirit Box, Architect,
Sleep Token. Can open.
Yeah, Architect, Sleep Token, and Spirit Box. I'll give my top three for the time being.
All right, we're going to stand those.
Yeah, I found a new band like earlier this week too. If you're, have you ever listened to a band called Alpha Wolf?
No, I have not.
So they're heavy. They're Australian. There's a band called Downswing. That's the name of the band. They're like Aviana meets Alpha Wolf. They're just brutal. Actually, my last reel that I posted, that song that was on it, that's the band Downswing.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm starting to get into them too, but I still got to do the watch the interviews with the band, and I'm the guy that reads the interviews, watches interviews, watch the live shows. Yep. I do all that stuff. So
yeah, I just found a new one from the UK, a band called Softplay. Sounds very, you know, melodic, and they're just a two man kind of punk hardcore band. Little bit of synth, little bit of like digitization in it. But they just changed their name. They used to be called Slaves. They released two albums or three albums. They got a lot of pushback on that name, obviously. And then now they're Softplay.
They were named. So there's another band called Slaves.
Okay.
Do you remember Johnny Craig? Amorosa?
Yeah.
He sang or sings for Slaves. I don't know if they're still together or not. They may have broke. Johnny Craig, you never know what's going on with him.
Okay, so maybe that's the reason why they had to end up changing their name.
Yeah, there's a band called Slaves, and Johnny Craig was fronting it. That was after his fifth band, and I think they may have probably kicked him out of that one too. Who knows? But
gotcha.
What about you? What are your top three? If you had to do top three bands, you'd put me in the spot.
God, that's not how this happens. That's not how this works in this spot. I'll tell you what. If I'm gonna list my three favorite bands of all time, it's gonna be crazy. This is not in any type of order whatsoever. I'm just gonna go with like my top three that I could not live without. That's the Beatles, U2, and Guns N' Roses. Simple as that.
Oh, solid. I can do that.
Simple as that. Now, if I wanted to go more like digging into the different genres, like I was raised by the Sex Pistols. Like my youngest son's name is Lydon, named after John Lydon from the Sex Pistols. So my like they almost, have to be up there. What's that?
My dad almost named me Bon Scott. He was this. My mom wouldn't let him do it. Yeah, I think as a kid I would have hated it. As an adult, it would have been the most badass thing ever.
Yeah. There's so many. Like I'd put Gaslight Anthem up there. Day to Remember. E-Town Concrete has to be up there. These are some smaller, lesser-known bands that people have never heard of. Strife, Snapcase, you know, Earth Crisis is one of my favorite bands of all time. I can't do that. I can't do it. I'll stick with U2, the Beatles, and Guns N' Roses. Easier that way.
U2's Octung Baby is one of my favorite albums of all time. That is a phenomenal album, front to back. Like, it's still an album to go back and listen to.
Rattle and Hum was actually the first CD I ever got.
Really?
Yep, and then I had the VHS of that because they did like a music movie to Rattle and Hum. It was like a two-piece. They did the live, you know, the live-ish album. That's what it was supposed to be. Yeah. And then they did a video along with it as well.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, yeah. One of my favorite albums of all time is U2 Live at Red Rocks. I think it's probably the greatest live album ever. Sunday Bloody Sunday from there is just, it's mind-blowing. Like, if anyone's out there, go watch it on YouTube. Bono's performance of Sunday Bloody Sunday at Red Rocks, I think it's 85, is insane.
Absolutely insane. A show there too, man. Like, that's a bucket list for me.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, without a doubt. That's on there. My wife knows that. You know what I mean? I would, two things. I'd love to see U2 at Red Rocks and the Killers in Las Vegas.
Killers in Vegas would be fun, dude. That would be a real fun show, yeah.
For sure. All right, Pat. So listen, let people know exactly where they can find you. Let people know where they can listen to you, the Par None podcast, your new podcast come up. Give them all the details, because obviously we're going to put all this stuff in the liner notes and then post it all over Instagram when the episode is released. But give that to them as they're listening now.
For sure. So my handle is PJR Scratch Golf. That's my Instagram handle. That's where you find all my videos. I'm mainly just on Instagram. As far as podcasts go, it's Par None. And it's on every streaming platform. It is on YouTube. It is on literally everything. And the new one is called Golf Rehab. We haven't posted anything yet, but we do have an Instagram page, and we're trying to do some posts and build some traction there. So those are the three places you'll find me is PJR Scratch Golf, Par None, and Golf Rehab.
Awesome. This has been a blast, dude. Love talking to you. Glad we got to meet kind of, you know, digitally face to face. Cannot thank you enough for your time for doing this as well.
Oh, thanks for having me on here, dude. I was so geeked when you asked me, like, hey, we're gonna make it happen this week. I'm like, yes, finally. I didn't want to harass you, but I was wanting to do this. So
awesome. Awesome. All right, people. So either get busy golfing or get busy dying. All right, I think we're clear. It won't let me stop recording on my side. Whatever. I mean, I'll edit that part at the end. Yeah, that's weird. The stop record button's not working. You can still hear me though, right?
Yeah, I can still hear your head. Give me 1 second real quick, all right?
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Hey, do you have a button on your side that says stop recording at all?
Invite.
Probably not.
Oh, yeah, I do.
All right, do me a favor and hit that.
I've tapped it twice and it didn't do anything.
Yeah. All right. I'm just, you know, so the way Skype works is like once the call's done, like so for 30 days, the whole video and everything stays in the Skype program. So I'm just assuming when we end the call that it'll just save the same way. But normally, like I just hit stop recording and it starts saving it, but it's not doing that.
Yeah, that would really suck too if you ended the call and it just disappeared.
Yeah, and that's why I'm just looking around at everything else to see what else is on here that I might be able to. No, that's not it. No, it's got to work. Yeah, like I've shrunk the screen. I grew the screen. This computer today, I swear to God, like this wants to be the death of me.
That's how mine was yesterday. I had my internet go out yesterday too, which was just awful. So actually, it's probably best that you couldn't do it yesterday anyways because I had no I was out of internet till 5 o'clock.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't even get to go golfing. I plan on going golfing. My wife's like, hey, my friend owns a horse farm. She wants us to go horseback riding. I was like, okay. So my son went and played, and I rode horses.
I don't think I've ever ridden a horse.
I had never either.
It seems scary. I don't know if I want – I don't know if I trust him that much.
I tell you what, it was – like, it was sick. It was pretty cool, and I got done. It was only, like, 45 minutes or so, and I was like, wow, like, I get why people love this. Like, I completely understand why it's, you know, I'm sure people have that thing with golf. Yeah, that's what I related to my wife. I'm like, you know, people go to the range, they hit like 50 shitty shots. They hit one good one. They're like, wow, that's, man, that felt awesome. Like, I want to try that again.
That's all it takes is one good shot. That's what keeps us from quitting.
Yeah. Damn it. This is really kind of irking me. I had an episode like 100 episodes ago, we did a bang-up episode with this guy, Brian Spitz. He's a PGA pro in Massachusetts, qualified for the U.S. Senior Open. Had myself and my buddy out because it was right by us. It was 20 minutes away from our house. And we hung out with him and his wife all week. We do this banger episode of the podcast. and I go to shut it off and I get this error message from Skype. And like, I'm on the phone with their people for like 3 hours trying to get this data back. And they're just like, yeah, it's just not there, man. I'm like, no, it's there. Like, I can see it. It just says error. And they're like, yeah, did you hit record? I'm like, it's fucking right there.
That's wild.
I've probably hit this about 100 times already now.
Yeah, I've hit stop recording a few times too. I'm not doing anything at all.
All right, hey, well, worst comes to worst, we hang up and we got to do a whole goddamn thing over again, and that's fine by me.
I'm cool with that, so.
I will send you a message, though, dude, once this is done to make sure it is or not.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Hey, honestly, bro, absolutely fantastic. Had a blast. Love chatting with you. Like, seriously, one of those people I wish you lived around the block for me, you know?
Oh, dude, we'd have a good time. 100%. Yeah. I actually know some people. I talked to a couple people on Instagram that live out. You said you live in Pennsylvania, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I apparently need to come to Pennsylvania because it's a thing. I don't know why, but it is.
I'm not sure it's a thing.
That's how I feel about St. Louis, though. It's like, everyone's like, oh, St. Louis. I'm like, eh. I live outside the city for a reason. Like,
yeah. You got baseball and murder. That's about it. We do those two things well in St. Louis, you know?
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Baseball has been slacking a little bit too. So
this is very true.
Yeah.
Very, very true. All right, Bubba, listen, enjoy the other pod tonight. Yep. I'll shoot you a message. I'm sure this is fine. All right.
All right. Yeah. Appreciate you, man. If you ever want to do it again, just let me know. All right.
Yeah. I definitely do. So this is probably later this week, Thursday, Friday-ish.
Okay.
Unless, you know, depending on how the one with Tony from Dragged Under does, if that's like really going hard, then I might just hold this off till next Monday. You know what I mean? Make it my next week's one or so. But I'll obviously tag in, shoot you the link and all that stuff.
Yeah. Quick question. I was going to ask you. I didn't want to ask before. How many listeners usually get on these?
What a great question. Dude, it's all over the place. my most downloaded episode was 3,800 downloads.
Oh, wow.
My least downloaded episode was, it's like 650, 675. So we're going to get somewhere between that.
Okay. Good enough for me. I didn't want to know before because I was going to stress myself out. That's why I was waiting to ask you.
Yeah. So right now I'm working anywhere like the two-part Pinehurst one I just did. Both of them did like 1,300, 1,400.
Okay.
People have seemed to like, see, it depends. Like, people like the short ones that they can listen to the entire thing on a drive to and from.
Yeah.
But then what people tell me is like, hey man, when you've got a guest on, like, you need to be longer with that guest because you might not have them on again. And I'm like, oh, well, that's, you know, okay, that's a good point, you know? So you kind of always straddle the line between, you know, you never know what people want and you never know what their listening habits are going to be, you know?
And you can't please everybody either. That's the thing. Is like,
no.
There's some people that want it for the short drive and there's people that sit there while they're cleaning their house, have it in the background and they can listen to it for an hour, you know? So
yeah. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, here's the craziest thing that I find. So we do about, like every 30 days, we do about 25,000 Spotify impressions, which is people searching, people downloading, people listening, and people sharing. Those are the four things. Cool. Now, that's just Spotify. Yeah. My main listens come from iTunes. Gotcha. I go about 70% iTunes, like 25% Spotify, and then Google Podcasts or whatever the BS people listen to.
Yeah, Prime and all that other stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I have so many people that follow the Instagram page that don't even listen to the podcast. That legit are like, dude, like, I love your stuff. Oh, I love watching your son play golf. Like, wow, you went down there and stuff. I'm like, yeah, did you listen to the episode of that? They're like, episode of what? My podcast. Whole
page. This is the whole point of the page. Yeah.
Like, that's why the page started, so people could listen to the podcast. Like, oh, no, I don't listen to podcasts. Okay.
Yeah, I was like, thank you for following, I guess. Like,
we're cool. So, like, on Instagram, usually, like, per week, we're 30,000 to 40,000 reaches, or whatever they call. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So between the two, you know, it's you know, would I love 10,000 people to listen to every episode? Yeah, but that's happening to No Laying Up guys and Friday. Yeah. You know what I mean? Those numbers are like, I don't do it full time, man. You know what I mean? If I did and I knew how to work YouTube and I had someone working for me and doing the internet stuff and all I had to do was speak, then maybe. But, you know.
Yeah. It's kind of like shooting golf content. If I had a videographer out there with me, it'd be a lot easier than me doing it myself. And it would look a lot better.
Oh,
the amount of golf shots that I thought I had in frame that looked good, then I go back and watch the video. I'm like, great, half my swing wasn't in that video. That's awesome. And it's always the shot that I hit great.
You talk about frame. Everything I've ever filmed is from this. Like, that's, you know what I mean? Like, I don't have a camera, nothing. People are like, oh, dude, that would look so great if you could zoom in with this, like, you know, Nikon 500. I'm like, I have an iPhone.
Yep. There is an app. It's like $10 a month. It's called Captions. And you can actually upload the video on there. It'll do cool captions for you. It'll automatically do it. And there's like an AI zoom where it'll actually watch the video for you and zoom in on parts where it feels like it should zoom in on.
Super cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. It's been giving me some hell, but it could be because like my phone, like all my stuff's in the cloud. It is not getting from the cloud to the app.
Yeah.
It's
just, that's where all my, yep. I know that.
Pain in the ass.
How bad. Well, that's cool. I'll look into that.
Yeah. Makes it.
Yeah. My
AI everything makes everything easier.
my mantra was not to spend a cent on this podcast, but just to get stuff from it. I did buy this mic. That's it. It's the only thing I bought, you know?
I bought a mic and I have a little lamp back there too, because the lighting in my house can be kind of crappy.
Yeah, so. That's right. I've got that. And this is like my golf baseball card golf room. So
oh nice. Yeah. The binder's flag. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. They're all cool. Over the place there. Yeah. All right, bud. Well, listen, seriously. It's been a blast. If I get out to your neck of the woods or you get out here, we are playing golf.
Yes. If you could, next time you come to St. Louis, give me some notice. We will make it happen.
Okay. 100%. Sick, yeah. Dude. Sick.
All right.
Thank you, Pat. I appreciate it, bud.
No, peace.
All right. Be good, brother.
Absolutely. It depends on the COR of the flagstick. So the coefficient restitution flagstick. In U.S. Opens, I'll take it out. And every other tour event, when it's fiberglass, I'll leave it in and bounce that ball against the flagstick if I need to.
Podcast patrons, Leave the Pin Podcast is super stoked to have Gashouse Golf as their official clothing sponsor for the podcast. Go to gashousegolf.com. Find them on all forms of social media at Gashouse Golf. Gashouse makes affordable, eye-catching, one-of-a-kind polos that help you stand out from the crowd. Why spend $75, $100, or even more on polos that make you look like everybody else when you can get one at an affordable price from Gashouse Golf? Hit the ball a mile and look damn good doing it. Swannies is here with a fresh take. Performance-based materials are a given these days, but if you're looking for the stretchiest and most lightweight pieces that deliver a look that says I'm here for a good time, take a walk on the Swanee side. With fabric sourced from recycled plastics and design sourced from our very own weekend warriors, Swanee's is looking out for both our planet and those that need a little style to boost their drive another 15 yards. Premium looks from top to bottom at swanees.com.